Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Welcome to the serialized audiobook of The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. The All-Pro is also available as an ebook, a paperback, and as an ad-free, unabridged audiobook. For links to purchase any version, visit scottsigler.com/theallpro, one word, no spaces, or find it at scottsigler.com/books. The human locker room was all smiles. Men who hadn't seen one another in months greeted their teammates with the excitement of a shared season to come. Already dressed for practice, Quentin welcomed each player. He shook hands with Ariok Morningstar, the quiet, shy kicker, with Yotaro Kobayashi, the bleach-white number 2 tight end, with black-haired Samuel Darkeye, John Tweedy's backup at linebacker. Donald Pine and Yitzhak Goldman, Quentin's backups, walked in together. Zach let out an overly dramatic sigh of surprise.
Q, you're early? Gosh, what a surprise!
Turning over a new leaf, Quentin said. How's the family?
Everyone is fantastic. You know, you owe me for that intro to Danny Lundy. I'm going to have to cash in by insisting you come over for dinner. My boys whine at me every day that they want to meet you.
The thought of spending time with children made Quentin want to lie to come up with some excuse. But if he could manage dinner with the key, then he could handle eating with Yitzhak's family.
How about you let me take you and the family out in the town?
Zach's smile faded, then returned, now fake and forced. Quentin wouldn't have noticed the difference 2 years ago.
We'd rather have you over.
Now that Quentin thought about it, he'd never seen Yitzhak go out. Ever. Maybe that's what happened when you became a family man. Quentin didn't like kids all that much. The idea of sitting in Yitzhak's place, wherever that might be, for an evening with his wife and his boys? Ugh.
Let's hook that up once the season gets rolling.
He knew full well he wouldn't pursue it. Yitzhak knew it too.
Sure, he said. Once the season gets rolling.
Zach walked to his locker, leaving Quentin facing Don Pine. Pine, 2-time Galaxy Bowl champion, former MVP, former starting quarterback for the Ionath Krakens, now entering his second year as Quentin's backup. Quentin hadn't talked to Pine since September, when they'd met with Greedock and Hokor to talk about signing Sheboygan and the others.
Good to see you, Quentin said.
Same here, Q.
You also gonna invite me over for dinner?
Don smiled, his bright white teeth a contrast against his blue face and dark blue lips. He didn't say anything, just shrugged, then walked to his locker.
What did that mean?
Why did everyone else want to hang with Quentin, but Don Pine did not? Quentin didn't have long to dwell on it, as number 2 running back Yasud Murphy walked in the door, fists raised high.
You may all now relax. The Yasud is here to lead you to the promised land. You are safely in my protection.
The players waved at Yasud. Those close to him patted him on the shoulder. The previous season had been hard on him. He'd lost his starting position to Jew Tweedy, then spent much of the season either drunk, feeling sorry for himself, or both. To see him arrive in such good spirits made Quentin hopeful that Yasud would contribute this season. Yasud's tight, dark curls hadn't changed, but he'd modified his signature beard. Instead of one thick, narrow bound strand that hung down to his sternum, he'd turned it into two thinner ones of the same length. One he'd braided with orange ribbon, one with black. Yasud saw Quentin.
Q, how was your off-season?
Real good, thanks.
Quentin noticed that Sud seemed bigger than the last time they'd met.
Looks like you did more than just drink beer during yours.
Yasud laughed, then puffed up his chest in an exaggerated show of arrogance. The muscles in his neck and shoulders twitched.
Oh, yep. You know, been working out, but it's no big deal.
He raised his right fist, flexing his arm to show a rippling bicep. Yasud had always been a specimen, but there was no question that he'd put in a lot of time in the weight room. For someone who was already in prime shape to add that kind of definition, he must have worked extremely hard.
Sud looked at his biceps. Oh, hello. Why, I didn't see you there. You look marvelous.
Quentin laughed and pushed Yasud away.
You're anthropomorphizing your biceps?
Yasud narrowed his eyes, laughed a jock's laugh of disdain.
Anthropo-popo-what?
Anthropomorphize, Quentin said. It means, giving human attributes to something that isn't a person.
Yasud shook his head, his long beard braid swinging in time.
Now you're using big words, Hayseed? Did you take up Kimberlyn on his offer to tutor you?
Quentin shrugged and looked away, a little embarrassed. He didn't know why he should feel embarrassed about increasing his knowledge, but he still did. Kind of felt off to talk about such things in the locker room. Yasud seemed to sense Quentin's discomfort, so he changed the subject.
Well, if you think my beautiful, beautiful arms show the benefits of hard work, just wait until you see Warburg.
Quentin's smile faded. Tight end Rick Warburg was not someone Quentin really cared to see. Just like Quentin, Warburg hailed from the purest nation. Unlike Quentin, however, Warburg still embraced his racist upbringing, still practiced the religion. Well, that non-team attitude had dropped Warburg to third string behind George Starcher and Kobayashi. Third string was where Warburg belonged. John and Jude Tweedy entered the locker room, already arguing, focusing only on each other but drawing everyone's attention.
You're an idiot, John said.
No, you're an idiot,
Jude said.
Your face is an idiot, John said.
Yasud put both his hands over his heart.
Aw, brotherly love.
Both the Tweety boy stopped and glared at Yasud, who laughed and held up both hands, palms out.
My bad. I don't want to start any trouble this early in the season.
Good, Ju said. Just know your place.
Yasud's smile faded. A hush fell over the locker room.
You just better run hard, Ju. This won't be like last season. I'm out to take as many carries away from you as I can.
Ju sneered and laughed.
Whatever, scrub. I'm going all pro this year, so you bring your best.
Yasud's jaw muscles twitched as he ground his teeth. Even on his best day, Yasud was nowhere near as talented as Jude Tweedy. Everyone knew it. Sud walked to his locker. The Tweedy brothers did the same. The conversational buzz returned to normal. Quentin had just started to head out onto the field when Rick Warburg and Tom Perilous walked in. Everything went silent. 10 humans stared at someone they barely recognized. Quentin wasn't even sure if it was Warburg. It had to be someone bigger, stronger, maybe, wearing a Warburg mask. Rick Warburg had played the 26-83 Tier 1 season at about 365 pounds. 6 years of football had made Quentin pretty good at knowing a player's weight from just a quick glance. Warburg now weighed at least 380. And all of those added 15 pounds were muscle. More than 15 pounds, actually, as it appeared he'd lost some fat as well. Warburg looked like a 7-foot-tall, 380-pound bodybuilder. Don Pine let out a long whistle.
Anyone seen Coach Hokor? Because I think Warburg ate him.
Shuck you, blue boy, Warburg said.
That's a relief, Pine said. For a second there, I thought you were an imposter. But no, you're the same old Warburg we all know and love.
A few uncomfortable laughs filtered through the locker room. The men turned back to their preparations. Warburg and Tom Perilous walked over to Quentin. Tom extended his hand. Quentin shook it.
Q, Tom said. Have a good off season.
Solid, Quentin said. How about you, old man? How's the ankle?
Perilous smiled. At 36, he was the oldest human on the team. His face showed fine scars. The left side of his jaw seemed a little lower than the right. 15 seasons in the league had taken their toll.
Ankle is all rehabbed, Tom said. Looking forward to the season with you, whippersnapper.
Tom slapped Quentin's shoulder, then walked to his locker, leaving Quentin alone with Rick Warburg. Rick offered his hand. Quentin didn't want to shake it, but if he expected people to overcome their prejudices and play as a team, then he had to do the same. Lead by example. He shook Rick's hand, feeling the power in the man's grip.
Warburg, Quentin said. Welcome back.
High one, praise your travels, Rick said. It was a friendly phrase from the purest nation culture, but there was nothing friendly about the tone. The way Rick said it made it clear he did not like the fact that most of Quentin's travels were with the sub-races.
Same to you, Quentin said.
I have worked very hard during the off-season.
Quentin nodded.
I can see that.
This is the last year of my contract with the Krakens. It is my 8th season in football, and I am a free agent at the end of it. I want off this team. I want a new start. I want a big contract.
Good luck with that, Quentin said.
You're going to help me.
Afraid a big contract and a new team are beyond my control.
Warburg smiled.
Don't give me that. I'm in the best shape of my career, and not just physically. I've been working on my route running, my catching, my blocking. I'm better than I've ever been. Better than him, he said, jerking his thumb at George Starcher, who appeared to be having an in-depth conversation with an orange and black plaid towel.
Quentin, you are my countryman, Warburg said. Maybe you don't like me, but I will show you that I am the best tight end on this team. And when I do, you will throw me the ball.
Quentin felt his temper rising.
And if I don't?
Warburg shrugged.
If I'm the best and you don't throw me the rock, then it just reveals that all you're preaching about team and unity is pure crap. It'll show that you're just as much of a bigot as me. Only difference is, I take pride in who I really am. See you on the field.
Rick turned and walked to his locker. Quentin watched him go, wondering about the tight end's words. Was Rick right? Did Quentin avoid throwing Rick the ball because of Rick's racism? And if so, was that wrong? Quentin shook the thought away. It didn't really matter. Rick might be bigger, but he was still third on the depth chart and wouldn't see that much playing time. Despite the fact that George Starcher painted his face and talked to towels, he was poised to be the best tight end in the GFL that season. Jew wasn't the only Kraken looking at an all-pro year. Warburg wouldn't get the chance to test his claims. Quentin headed for the field. The first day of practice focused on route running, refamiliarizing the quarterbacks with their receivers. Quentin's whole body tingled as he looked around the quiet temple that was Ionath Stadium. Empty stands reached to the sky, stands full of blazing orange seats. Orange, except for the seats that spelled out 100-yard-long Ionath on the home side, 100-yard-long Krakens on the visitors. A light breeze crossed the stadium, either artificially pumped through the city dome or perhaps a natural occurrence from an enclosed space 2 miles in diameter. The breeze made Quentin look to the 22 towering pillars that lined Ionath Stadium, each pillar holding a long, lightly undulating banner from one of the Tier 1 teams. He saw the blood red of the Tow Pirates, the deep purple and white of the Y'all Criminals, and the red and white of Ionath's arch-rival, the Wabash Wolfpack. Other familiar banners lined the stadium. The blue polka dots on yellow of the Corona Delana Cloud Killers and the gold, silver, and copper of the Jupiter Jacks among them. He also saw 2 banners that had not been there the year before. the red, white, and blue star of the Texas Earthlings, and the metal flake red circle on the flat black banner that belonged to the OS-1 orbiting Death. Those teams had earned promotion during the Tier 2 tournament, fighting their way to Tier 1 and replacing the relegated franchises of Mars and Chilich. That was the nature of Tier 1. Nothing was promised, and every game mattered. Even if you had a losing record, you needed to play your ass off to stay in the big time. At the end of the season, if your team was the worst in your division, bye-bye, so sad, too bad, you're dropped down to Tier 2. The system ensured high-quality play throughout the campaign. Even teams with losing records fought like mad to stay off the bottom. On the blue playing field, players worked in position-specific groups. Near the orange end zone, the offensive line ran through drills. In the black end zone, John Tweedy led the defense. Human and Quith Warrior linebackers, Sklerno defensive backs, Heavy G defensive ends, and key defensive tackles ran through blitz schemes and defensive rotations. The key. Quentin had once thought of the key as nightmares. Well, they were nightmarish, to be sure. Thick, 12-foot-long tubular bodies bent at the middle, half that length staying parallel to the ground, half rising up to support four muscular, multi-jointed arms, and a horrific head. Five equidistant eyes let the key see in all directions at once. Below that ring of eyes, the mouth of six triangular lips that peeled back from six black triangular teeth. Above the eyes, the species' unique dreadlock-like cluster of vocal tubes. Three pairs of legs supported bodies that range from just over 500 pounds to just under 700. Skin tones range from deep reddish black to brownish orange, all of it embedded with enamel dots that made the creatures gleam in the sunlight. Chirps and squeals drew Quentin's attention back to the middle of the field. His receivers waited at the 50-yard line. He laughed and shook his head at the exuberant Sklerno. They jumped, shook, and even fainted as he approached. While it might be uncomfortable to be thought of as a deity, it was also damn funny to watch the reaction from his followers. Haywick, his number one receiver. Milford, his number two, who had been a rookie alongside him back in the seemingly distant Tier 2 season of 2682. Halawa, third receiver and last year's rookie standout. Halawa was just a hair bigger than her twin sister, defensive back Wahiwa, which made Halawa the biggest Sklerno on the team. The veterans Mez Quiddick and Richfield rounded out his receiving corps. If Greedock signed both Sheboygan and Terah the Freak, where would they fall on the depth chart? Would Sheboygan be able to challenge Mez Quiddick for the number four spot? Would Terah? Richfield's spot was safe because of her kick return ability, but the addition of two rookies meant the Krakens had seven receivers. Someone would be bumped down to the practice squad or cut from the team altogether. For his receivers, that meant every pass in practice counted. He, Hokor, and Don Pine would be watching. "Ladies," Quentin said when he reached midfield, "did y'all have a good offseason?" Haywick shook, but maintained her composure. Halawa started running in circles. Milford hopped in place, each light leap taking her 10 feet into the air.
"Quentin Barnes, the Holy One, welcome home, welcome home."
"Milford," he said, "do anything interesting in your time off?"
"Oh, yes, yes. Stockbridge and I went on a missionary mission to spread the word of the Church of Quentin Barnes."
Quentin's smile faded. "You what?"
"Spreading the gospel."
Milford jumped a little bit higher.
"Converting the unconverted to the gospel of Quentin Barnes."
"Didn't know I had a gospel." Every time he thought he was comfortable with his holy position, the Sklerno did something to remind him he was not. His starting receiver and backup cornerback were also his missionaries? "And, how many converts did you get?"
"342,112,
Milford said. She stopped jumping.
"Was that not enough? Have I failed you, O Quentin Barnes?"
No, that's fine. 300,000 converts? To his church? Something he didn't acknowledge in any way? It hurt to even think about it. He didn't want to think about it. Fortunately, he knew one thing that would block out all other thoughts. "Line up, ladies!
Let's do our favorite. Out patterns to the right.
The Sklorno receivers squealed with joy, happy to get a few passes in before the tight ends and running backs came out to practice. Quentin grabbed a ball off a rack. He bent in a fake snap position. He looked to his right, at Haywick, who was first in the line of quivering Sklorno.
Hut hut!
He slapped the ball in his hands to simulate the snap, brought the ball up to his left ear as he dropped back three steps. His eyes followed Haywick as she shot off the line and made her cut. By the time the ball left his hands, Quentin no longer had thoughts of his church, Warburg, Becca, or anything else that might distract him. He thought of nothing but football, and his soul swelled with his own form of rapturous joy.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
The last time Quentin had been in this place, he'd still been shaking from a suicide bomb that had ravaged the Kraken's victory parade. And that day seemed safer than this. Greedock's private chamber was on the top floor of the Kraken's building. Priceless paintings and sculptures lined the circular walls, each lit up by its own small spotlight, illuminated like the treasures that they were. In front of Quentin, the 10-foot-high, white marble pillar that held Greedock the Splithead. Greedock sat in his cushy, black throne, looking down at Quentin and Danny Lundy.
Greedock, my client has been treated like a serf, a servant, a slave.
A slave?
Greedock said.
In what culture do slaves earn 1.2 megacredits a year?
Quentin stood quietly, watching the drama play out. Both Yitzhak and Pine had told him to keep his mouth shut, to let his agent do the talking. Quentin had never worked with an agent. He had, however, worked with Greedock the Splithead, vicious crime boss, sentient, capable of ordering your death, team owner that Quentin had tricked into traveling to OS-1 to sign you Tweety. There were few ideas worse than making Greedock angry, yet that seemed to be Danny's specific goal.
Slavery takes many forms,
Danny said.
For what you pay a starting quarterback, you might as well make him a chained-up chew toy for a pet fizzlecarp.
Greedock turned a single softball-sized eye toward Quentin.
That can be arranged.
Greedock's fur fluffed up a bit, but there was something fake about it. Quentin couldn't put his finger on it. His instincts told him that while Greedock was clearly angry, the crime boss was trying to play it up to a more intimidating level. Had Quentin learned so much about Greedock, he could spot when his boss was acting?
Greedock, don't talk to my client. I'm the one doing the negotiating.
Negotiating?
Greedock continued to stare at Quentin.
Is that what you call it, Dolphin? Because by your insolent tone, it seems like you're looking for a way to wind up on some Sklorno's dinner plate. I hear dolphin steaks are quite the prized delicacy.
Just stop with the threats, Greedock. They're boring. You've already dealt with me for John Tweedy's contract and the contracts of Yitzhak Goldman, Vuko, and Budo. We worked those out, did we not?
Greedock's fur fell flat again. He seemed calmer, more resigned to the process.
You're right, Dolphin. We negotiated in good faith. So let me begin. We will triple Quentin's salary and make a 5-year commitment.
Quentin had a brief second to comprehend the numbers. 3.6 megacredits a season? But only a brief second, because Danny's insulting squeal giggle filled the rounded room and bounced off the priceless works of art.
3.6!
The dolphin had to choke words out between intense blasts of laughter. His wet, rainbow-colored body shook.
Three, and then...
Danny's mechanical legs seemed to give out on him. He fell to his side, shivering, squeals of laughter damn near piercing Quentin's eardrums. Greedock's black fur fluffed.
Dolphin, I am not enjoying your insulting display.
The laughter continued. Greedock's fur fluffed farther. And this time, Quentin could see it was no act.
Barnes,
Greedock said.
This is what you choose as your representation?
Quentin looked down at the squealing, shivering dolphin, then back up at Greedock atop his ridiculous white pedestal. Quentin said. Danny's laughter suddenly died out. His silver legs flexed. He stood.
Quentin, don't answer that question. Greedock, your offer is pathetic, piteous, and puny. We want 20 megacredits a season.
Quentin stopped breathing. Greedock leaned forward.
Did you say 20?
20 per season. For 5 seasons.
For 5 seasons? That's 100 million.
Oh, yeah,
Danny said, as if he just remembered a trivial detail.
And 50 million of that guaranteed. Up front.
Greedock's eye flooded black.
50 up front?
50 up front,
Danny said.
And performance bonuses. Do you want to repeat that as well?
Greedock stared, his eyes so black it looked like a gemstone, his fur so fluffed he looked bigger than Quentin had ever seen. If Danny's game was to anger Greedock, then the dolphin had just scored a blowout victory.
Ridiculous,
Greedock said.
You're only trying to highball me because I tried to lowball you.
Why, Greedock? I didn't know,
Danny said.
I assumed your opening offer was a sincere gesture of INS belief in my claim, buddy.
Your offer would make Quentin Barnes the highest paid quarterback in the league. Higher than Frank Zimmer. Even higher than Rick Renaud. Zimmer has won championships. Renaud has put teams in the Galaxy Bowl.
And Barnes is going to do both.
He's done nothing yet, Dolphin.
Dragging your team out of Tier 2 and keeping them in Tier 1 for a second season is nothing, guy?
Those things are not the same as a playoff victory. Definitely not the same thing as a GFL title.
Of course not,
Danny said.
But Barnes is going to give someone playoff victories and a GFL title. If not the Krakens, then another team.
Danny let the words hang in the air. The room fell to a deathly silence. Quentin swallowed, so loud he heard the noise echo off the priceless sculptures. Sure, he had thought himself a good manipulator. New to the game, but a student of the process, on his way to rivaling Greedock's skill. No matter how much Quentin learned about manipulation, however, he now understood he would always be a rank amateur compared to Danny Lundy.
You dare,
Greedock said,
You dare to threaten me with taking my quarterback to another franchise?
Danny's legs extended. His big, streamlined body rose in the air until he was at eye level with Greedock. Quentin looked up at them both, a battle of wills taking place 6 feet above his head.
Quentin Barnes is the real deal, buddy,
Danny said.
You have a choice to pay him before he becomes the best quarterback in the league or after. 100 megacredits is the before price, guy. Based on your fur-fluffing range, I'm guessing you don't want to hear the after price.
Greedock stood in his little chair.
Get out! Get out, Dolphin, and take your unproven quarterback with you!
Quentin, let's go. We've given the splithead plenty to think about.
Greedock stamped a tiny foot.
There is no thinking. Come back when your contract requests are reasonable.
The offer is on the table,
Danny said.
If you won't take it, someone else will. You should know, Greedock, that I've already been contacted by the Mars Planets, the McMurdo Murderers, the Bartell Waterbugs, and the Toe Pirates.
If Greedock had been faking rage before, he wasn't faking it anymore. Quentin saw the same quiet, dangerous calm Greedock had shown just before killing Mopook the Sneaky.
Teams are interested, guy,
Danny said.
Quentin will get the deal we want. It's up to you to decide if that deal is with Ionath. We'll be waiting to hear from you. Good day.
Danny lowered his legs and started walking out of the chamber. Quentin stood there, still looking up at the enraged Greedock. Was all of this a mistake? 3 years ago, he couldn't have even imagined having $3.6 million. Should he just take that offer?
Quentin!
Danny's voice, a squealing command that would have been understood even without the vocal modifier.
Time to leave, guy. Come with me, and do not talk to Greedock without me present until this negotiation is complete.
Greedock's petty palp hands curled into shaking fists.
There is no negotiation. You get out of here, Lundy, and take that ungrateful yakko-chat of a quarterback with you. No one tells me how to run my organization.
Quentin turned and quickly walked out of the chamber. He stayed quiet as Greedock's well-dressed guards led him and Danny to the elevator. The elevator doors closed. Danny's left hand reached into a pocket hanging from his harness. He pulled out a small fish and popped it into his long mouth.
That went pretty well,
he said after swallowing it down.
What? Are you shucking crazy, Danny? I've never seen Greedock that mad, and trust me, I've done things to make him mad. Are you trying to get me killed?
Relax, human. I've seen him worse.
Worse than that?
Oh, sure. You should have seen him when I negotiated for John Tweedy's last contract.
But, Danny, maybe I should just take Greedock's offer. $100 million? That's too much money.
Danny turned, sharply and suddenly. He again reached into his bag, pulled out a fish, then slapped Quentin across the face with it. Quentin's right hand went to his right cheek. A bit of cold wetness clung there.
Did you just smack me in the face with a fish?
I did.
Why did you just smack me in the face with a fish, Danny?
Danny's legs rose up until his narrowing black eyes were level with Quentin's. In the elevator's close confines, Quentin once again realized the dolphin's size.
Too much money? Don't you ever say those words to me again. You promised me we would do this my way, guy. You're not backing out of that now. This deal is mine, do you understand me? No one gets in the way of my deals, not even my client.
Quentin took a half step back, the farthest he could go before his butt hit the elevator wall. He had signed an insane dolphin as his agent.
Yeah, Quentin said. Sure, Danny, you handle the deal.
Good,
Danny said. His legs lowered. His eyes returned to their normal, rounded, friendly shape.
Trust me, Quentin. I'm acting in your best interest, guy. You'll be happy when this is done.
Danny popped the face-slapped fish into his mouth.
But what if Greedock doesn't take the offer?
Then you play for another team next season. Let's go get some lunch, buddy. I'm in the mood for squid. That work for you?
Yeah,
Quentin said, his heart instantly heavy at the thought of wearing anything other than the orange and the black.
Sure. Squid sounds fine.
Quentin sat low in his seat, looking out the cab's window at the streets and sidewalks of Ionath City. The densely packed, mostly red, hexagonal buildings rolled by, most of them reaching some 30 stories high to almost touch up against the city's clear, protective dome. The view did nothing for Quentin, however, because he was worried.
Chodo, come on! Tell me what's going on!
I do not know, Quentin,
Chodo said.
All I know is that John Tweedy told me I had to get you to his apartment as soon as possible, and to keep you safe.
Why his apartment? If there's danger, why not the Kraken's building?
Again, Quentin, I do not know. My job is to keep you safe, not to debate policy with John Tweedy.
Quentin turned away from the window to stare at the eye of his linebacker bodyguard. Chodo's baseball-sized eye remained mostly clear, but three colors, green and yellow and dark blue, cast thin swirls across his cornea. Yellow was the color of excitement, while green usually revealed stress or anxiety. The colors weren't exact matches with a specific emotion. They weren't always consistent, but they did give insight into a Quith warrior's state of mind. Like most warriors, Chodo loved the excitement of danger and loved a good fight, so the yellow made sense. Quentin's safety was Chodo's responsibility, a task assigned by none other than Greedock the Splithead. Greedock was Chodo's Shamakath, his leader. Failing a leader was unforgivable in the Quith culture, so being stressed that Quentin might get hurt, might get killed, that correlated with the green swirls. But blue? Blue, as far as Quentin could tell, was the color of betrayal. Quentin had never before seen Chodo's eyes carry the color blue. Was this some kind of a trap? Had Chodo been bought off by one of Quentin's newfound enemies? Anna Volani, Gloria Ogawa, the Zoroastrian Guild, maybe even someone from the Toe Pirates who wanted payback for Quentin not throwing games during the Tier 2 season? Was Chodo in league with any of them? No. Quentin would not let himself suspect Chodo the Bright. Chodo had gone to OS-1 with Quentin to rescue Ju Tweedy from Anna Volani, had fought side by side in the brawl at Chucky Chong's league-style House of Chow. That act could have even put Chodo's family, who lived on OS-1, the planetoid controlled by Volani Syndicate, in grave danger. Chodo had earned the benefit of the doubt. Quentin would put his fears away and trust his teammate.
We're here,
Chodo said. Quentin snapped back to reality. The cab pulled up in front of John Tweedy's building. Chodo got out first, looked up and down the street, scanning for danger. It reminded Quentin of a time 1 year earlier, following the Victory Parade bombing that had killed 15 sentients. Back then, Quentin hadn't been allowed to go anywhere alone. Chodo gestured for Quentin to step out. He did. The cab merged back into the ring road's traffic. The scene looked just the same as it had for Quentin's first visit to John Tweedy's apartment. Two blue-uniformed key guards stood on either side of the building's doors, blue helmets hiding their five equidistant eyes. Between them, in the open door, stood a Quith worker.
Elder Barnes, the worker called out. I am Pizzat the Servitus. Do you remember me?
Sure, Quentin said as he and Chodo walked through the doors. Yeah, I remember you.
Oh, I am flattered, Elder Barnes, that one of such importance and stature as you would recall a brief meeting with the lowly likes of me. It is truly a memorable day.
When it came to kissing ass, no sentient in the galaxy could match a Quith worker.
Pizzat, is John expecting me?
Oh, yes, Elder Barnes. You and Chodo should head right up. Mr. Tweedy did say it was urgent, and that speed was of the essence.
Pizzat led them to the elevator. Quentin took in the lobby's finery. It was not on the level of Greedock's private chamber, but still a grand display of wealth. John lived here, as did Don Pine. Pine, who had never invited Quentin up for a beer, or just to hang out. Outside of anything football-related, Pine kept his distance. Quentin and Chodo took the elevator up. When it opened, John was waiting. He looked more wide-eyed, more hyper than usual, and his usual state was very wide-eyed and very hyper.
Q! Wow, are you okay?
Better safe than scary scrolled across his face.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Are you sure?
John, you saw me at practice earlier today.
John's eyes widened further, and he nodded, as if he'd forgotten about practice until this moment.
Well, you never know, Q. We had to keep things secret.
John, what's going on? Chota wouldn't tell me anything.
John shook his head.
He couldn't. Once you're inside, I'll fill you in. Come on, let's get out of the hall.
Quentin followed John into Suite 15B. The short entryway led to the living room that Quentin knew was packed full of football memorabilia from John's 11-season career with teams such as Fiona's University, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Thomas Three Lions. This time, however, the room was dark, almost pitch black.
John, something wrong with your lights?
Oh, right. Let me get that for you, Q.
Quentin expected to see the room's lights turn on, but instead, he saw a bunch of tiny flames spring to life in the center of the room. Candles, their dim light illuminating the shapes of at least a dozen sentients.
Surprise!
The combined voices called out. Quentin took a step back. The normal lights flared on, revealing a room packed full of Kraken's players and staff. Virak the Mean, Crazy George Starcher, Yasud Murphy, Ariok Morningstar, Jew Tweedy, the massive form of Michael Kimberlin, and the even more massive key lineman. In the center of the room, standing behind an orange and black cake decorated with the Kraken's logo, stood the tiny form of Ma Tweedy. She wore an orange and black Kraken's jacket that matched the big cake.
Hello, Quentin, she said. We meet at last.
Ma Tweedy, what are you doing in INF City?
I moved, she said. Jonathan and Julius felt it wasn't safe for me on Orbital Station 1, not with that evil tramp Anna Villani angry at my Julius.
Ma, Jew said, don't use my real name.
Shut it,
she snapped.
This day isn't about you, Julius, so be quiet.
Jew hung his head.
Yes, Ma.
Well, it's nice to meet you in person, Quentin said. What's this cake all about?
Ma Tweedy shook her head. Her bony shoulders were perpetually pulled up almost to her ears, and they moved in time with her head.
Honestly, Quentin, you're a wonderful boy, but I'd hoped Jonathan and Julius would find someone a little smarter to hang out with. All of these sentients are here for your birthday.
My birthday?
What was going on? He knew what birthdays were, of course. He'd been to a few celebrations, but...
Q, John said. Don't disappoint Ma. Blow out the candles.
Yeah, Jew said. Don't disappoint Ma.
Jew looked quite a bit like his brother John, only slightly bigger and slightly meaner. Jew also wore fine clothes and kept his black hair stylish, while John seemed more at home in jeans and a sweatshirt.
Quentin, she said, what's the matter?
She was such a tiny human. So small it made one wonder how she could have given birth to a pair of professional football players. Everyone was staring at him. Smiles were fading. All of this felt so strange.
I didn't know it was my birthday. How did you guys know?
Ma Tweedy shook her head again.
Honey, now you're just being stupid. We looked in the Kraken's program. You act like you've never seen a birthday cake before.
Sure I have, Quentin said. Just not for me.
No one spoke. Quentin felt very small, very weird. He'd ruined this. His throat felt tight. His eyes stung a little. He wanted to leave, wanted to be alone back in his room in the Kraken's building, or, even better, up in his yacht. Ma Tweedy walked out from behind the table. She wasn't that much taller than Hokor the Hookchest, or Commissioner Frost. She stopped in front of him, looked up at him.
Quentin, kneel down here for just a minute, honey.
He did. She put her arms around his neck and hugged him. He felt his body stiffen, but she ignored it.
It's your birthday,
she whispered in his ear so that only he could hear.
I think I know how strange this is for you. You don't know how to handle this, but all of these sentients are here because they love you. We can talk about it later if you want, but for now, stop acting like an embarrassing idiot and blow out the damn candles.
She kissed his temple, then gave him a light slap on his left cheek. The look in her eyes made it clear he had no choice but to do what she said. He blinked a few times. The strange feeling started to evaporate. So what if this was the first birthday party he'd ever had? Ma Tweety was right. It was his party, and that cake looked delicious. Quentin looked at all the faces. He realized he was looking for one in particular, but didn't find it. Becca wasn't there. Oh well, her loss. Quentin picked up the knife sitting next to the cake.
Do I eat the first piece?
No, honey, Ma Tweety said. You give cake to the guests. Cut the right side first. I made that end special for your little key friends. And cut slowly. I don't want the shushalik juice to get all over my piece.
I'm gonna be sick, scrolled across John's face.
Oh, Ma, you put those gross things in the cake?
Jonathan, shut it! The left side of the cake is chocolate, but even if there is some shushalik juice on your piece, you'll eat it and you'll like it. Understand me?
John hung his head.
Yes, Ma.
Quentin reached out with the knife, but George Starcher waved at him to stop.
Candles first, George said.
No paint on his face this time. George looked surprisingly normal.
You have to blow them out, Quentin, and make a wish when you do.
Quentin lowered the knife. He absently counted the flickering flames. 20 of them. He lowered his head.
I wish for a GFL championship, he said.
He smiled at the cheers of his teammates as he blew out the candles.
You have been listening to The All-Pro, Season 4 of the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by Ariok Morningstar with post-production by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on Scott and more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song The Kids Are Coming For You by the band Super Weapon. You're kind of sick.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.